committee, you would have heard the introductions of everybody on the committee during the last hearing minutes, so I won't go through that again. Perhaps I'll leave it to you to make the opening statement that you wish with respect to the two allegations of contempt up to before the vote of this committee, and then maybe our members will have answers questions for you, so I'll do it.
Thank you. I do have a statement that I will read, and it's not too lengthy, but I will work through it slowly. I've acted towards St. Peter's since 1991. We first met in 1987 when I was counsel for Wyatt Creek, a National Party candidate for the city of Wairarapa. The National Party had refused to conduct or fund the Wairarapa political petition, so it was conducted on the funds that we raised. Wyatt Creek had the ultimate responsibility for the final cost. In the final event, as we won the petition, the National Party had to underwrite the shortfall. In the early stages of the petition, we had a visit from a former electorate chairman of the Taupo electorate. He was the electorate chairman at the time of the Taupo electoral petition. I cannot recollect his name, but recall he was elderly and had a huge wealth of experience in political administration. He and I discussed the petition at length and the need to fundraise as the party was refusing to support the petition. A key part of the advice was to protect the candidate, to meet and meet the client, from subsequent political allegations that the politician had been purchased by a financial contribution. I saw this as the principal way to conduct the fundraising. I have adopted and followed this principle throughout all of my dealings with St. Peter's. Winston and I developed an easy rapport during the Wairarapa electoral petition. At that time, I was critically uncomfortable with the National Party philosophy and was involved in investigating issues involving the DNC. This work was voluntary on my part. Winston had an issue with the National Party. I agreed to act for him as his counsel. This was the first time I acted for him. The dismissal from the party and properly conducted by the National Party was right litigation risk. The proceeding was not run properly. I changed my role from being a witness and contacting QC with the barrister conducting the application for review. During a reconstituted procedure, Winston was dismissed from the National Party, which I regard to this day as a major travesty of justice. I was told and had no reason to doubt that in the middle of the deliberation by the National Party Council, Mr. Cox, who had been excluded for potential bias, a fundraiser for the National Party, entered the room and was told the council he had a substantial sum of money pledged to the party if they dismissed Winston Peters. They decided to dismiss Winston. I want to emphasise, I do not know whether or not Mr. Cox did that. I'm just simply saying what I was told he did. And anywhere in the statement where I say I've been told things, I'm giving evidence as to what I am told. I'm not giving evidence as to the truth or otherwise of what it is that I have been told. I have a long way to from here discussion with Winston. He wanted to sue the BNC issue, and he felt he had the ability to politically contribute to being dealt. I agree that I'd help him to return to mainstream politics. This included a political legal campaign to inquire into the BNC. Winston faced well-funded corporates with well-resourced legal teams from the large law firms. These corporates were willing to use every legal technicality to attack and discredit Winston. The key for the corporate tactics was to open litigation Winston could not afford to run. The classic was the pay called Peter a liar headline in the Herald. We understand the Herald was indemnified by Faye to run this headline. The plan was Winston would sue, and they would tie up the small resource he had in yet more litigation. Winston did not respond as we understood their tactics. The reality is Winston has had to use the law in the same way they were using it against him, or else he would have never survived the years of sustained attacks by certain corporates. In 1991, the procedure we have adopted regarding the legal fees is, I will provide the legal resources that he required. The legal costs would not be invoiced by my instructing solicitor to create an unpaid debt. The obligation to meet any outstanding fee was understood as a moral, not a legal obligation. If the money was not fundraised, then my time was donated. I would, where possible, fundraise, and any funds raised would go towards the fees due. Where funds were raised, Winston like Blood Brothers was Lynn McClark on TV3 on the 23rd of July. This is that. The relationship must be explained to be understood. And I need to make 17 points. First, in 1991, Winston faced a campaign to meet to denigrate him and end his political career. He then faced a range of defamation actions that had the sole aim of financially ruining him. The arrangement I described arose out of these attacks. Two, I saw the intent of his political foes as seeking a checkbook judgment with the aim of bankrupting him. I considered this as unacceptable and decided I would ensure such attacks did not succeed. Three, in 1993, a client of mine received a quote from your prospectus of $80,000 from Pay Rich Wife. They did the prospectus themselves. They were later prosecuted for breaches of the Securities Act. I acted for them. They were approached by a person who advised them the charges would be dropped if they discontinued using me as a lawyer. They did not. But Robbie Carson was used to conduct the trial at which they were acquitted. Four. New Zealand First was also launched that year. After the launch, Winston scheduled a media where he would disclose the details of the party. I had the constitution and other documents to complete. An unknown person attempted to kidnap my son at his school. This threw the party preparation into disarray. At no time did he mention that the reason was the attempt to abduct my son. Five. The Securities Commission report on the BNZ reinsurance scheme was another attack on him, but reviewing that report in the courts was beyond our legal resources. The prophet attempted to validate in the public mind the falsifying of the BNZ's profit by some $40 million. The BNZ shares at the time were a listed stock, and the backers of the scheme were European Pacific, a company set up in Cook Islands by the BNZ and Pay Rich Wife. Capital Markets Limited, in which Pay Rich Wife were the major shareholders, was a major investor in the BNZ listed stock. The scheme had the effect of maintaining the share price of the BNZ after the 1987 share fallout. It also had the effect of providing the BNZ the ability to pay a very substantial dividend, and that dividend was in the main paid to Capital Markets Limited. Six, the wine box was delivered to me for Winston. I assisted this campaign to obtain a commission of inquiry. This was successful. Eventually my fees were paid by the government under a legal aid arrangement with the Solicitor General. Until this funding arrived, I operated as per our understanding. In this regard, Winston personally paid substantial fees to me as the government refused to backdate the funding. Seven, I accept the political gamesmanship leading up to the table in the wine box of robust politics. However, one incident that really concerned me was after the wine box was tabled in Parliament, there was a refusal by the then government to enable the media to see the wine box. This stalemate, which lasted for a period of time, was unprecedented. Finally, the government was forced to admit the documents to be crooked. The point is simple. The media was not allowed to see what was tabled, and that, to me, is unprecedented in New Zealand politics. Eight. The Commission on Inquiry was another example of the length that those involved will go to in order to discredit Winston. I applied for funding. I had to apply to the Commissioner Sir Ronald Davidson. For Tony Malloy, QC, to give expert evidence after Sir Ronald had finished his 3-month preliminary examination of the transaction. Sir Ronald had decided to embark on a full-ranging investigation, and I already declined the application, saying to me, and I quote, I do not need Tony's help with what the Americans call, quote, grand larceny, unquote. Nine. Sir Ronald reported that the transactions did not involve fraud. This result was contrary to the law and was resigned from his earlier position. To make matters worse, he criticised me for not calling Tony Malloy QC and Paul Darvell. Paul Darvell was all material time dead. The report was, in my opinion, a corrupt result, as the legal analysis of the Magnum transaction was not only patent. election conduct was drawn to my attention before election day. I went to Tauranga and saw a campaign that was contrary to my understanding of the law. I agreed to issue an election petition for Winston. This was filed and conducted. The same peace arrangement seamlessly continued. I was directly involved in fundraising with a range of potential donors. 15. I phoned Owen Wynn and he brought in $100,000 which was paid to me on account of my fees. My instructing solicitor had never seen Winston's invoice for this work. I can invoice this week any time I choose, but to do so would break our agreement not to grant it next June. The $100,000 was paid into my fees account. This was a payment towards completed work. All tax had been paid, including GST. Had these not been paid, then our arrangement would still be in place, i.e. a moral obligation to pay me, but not legal debt. 16. I am lawfully allowed to donate my time to assist a politician, and that creates no obligation that must be disclosed by the politician. 17. The disclosure of this arrangement will empower Winston's opponents to reformulate their length of checkbox strategy. For this reason, I have been deliberately less than forthcoming to the media, but have stated that you have not breached the rules of Cabinet or Parliament. I have never received any government appointments. I was offered the role of council assisting the BNZ at national province before the 1990 election. After the landslide election, I was told there would never be an inquiry and I should appoint an agent in the caucus and I would get jobs. I walked away very disillusioned as I voluntarily stepped in to help the National Party when they were out of power with a few friends. I got offices where I worked along with my department, Winston Peters, who was Minister of Maori Affairs. Campaign in 1990 was removed in new rights. Instead, we changed Roger Douglas as the new right leader to the new right parent of Ruth Richardson. I decided this time I would not accept the political patronage of any politician. Winston is of similar view of refusing to accept patronage. We believe the right person for the job is important. The importance of Winston, of my understanding, in the racing industry is a classic example. Winston has the ability to ensure I receive any kinds of government work that he does. We do not work that way. I'm often told by those in the body politic that I'm stupid not to demand such work. I do accept work for Winston as capacity as a leader of a political party. With a work possible, I have to pay down parliamentary services to work once complete as charged in parliamentary services. In the past 3 years, I have been paid in this manner. The work invoice was checked with his chief of staff, who worked at the time of Winston to ensure that work did comply with the appropriate funding guidelines. I've also done a wide range of work outside the guidelines, which is a voluntary provision of my time. The position is I have not rendered a fee note to the solicitor for the work done, and the solicitor has not rendered a bill to Winston. Until my instructing solicitor renders a bill to Winston, there is no debt owed by Winston. All payments received were for actual work done. They are not payments on account of work to be done, which under the Law Society rules would be required to be held in my instructing solicitor's trust account. I met my proper tax responsibilities in respect of any money received. Due to the comments in the media slurring Owen Glenn, who has done nothing wrong, I decided to tell Winston Peters that I had received a sum of approximately $100,000 from Owen Glenn, which was paid directly into my fees account towards the legal cost of the Tauranga electoral petition. On the 18th of July 2008, I saw Winston Peters at 5 p.m. and told him for the first time that Owen Glenn had paid me approximately $100,000 towards the time I had spent conducting the Tauranga electoral petition. In my presence, he immediately telephoned the Prime Minister. He then issued a media release. On a personal note, I find it repugnant that major corporate wealthy individuals can freely maintain and sustain legal attacks on a politician with impunity. I find that this behaviour seriously and deeply offends my sense of natural justice. I am not and have never been a member of any political party. Further, I have acted for MPs from both sides of the House, including members of Cabinet and former government. On the public record, I've appeared for Hewat, Gary Knapp, Wyatt Creech, and Winston Peters. There are others that I have represented that remain confidential and privileged. Giving my time is not a gift. Today, until I decide to render a fee note for my services to my instructing solicitor, and he sends the bill to the client.
Thank you, Peter, I guess you have a question.
You are a barrister, Saul?
I am.
And you were a barrister, Saul? can I ask you, who suggested to you that you approach that clinic?
I am unable to divulge that because of the privilege of his novels and take the privilege to wait. And I can tell you was not the leader of the president of the Labour Party or Winston Peter.
Well, we don't want to know who it wasn't. We want to know who it was.
Well, that's privilege that's not mine to tell, and there's nothing privileged way. And I have checked with the person concerned, and I have a refusal to waive the privilege from that person.
Point of order, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Jones.
This is really relevant. This is the power of the force.
Well, it's a pretty widely acting statement, Mr. Jones, and I think that's about its questions are out of the song you're allowed to continue to exploit.
Your position is that although you are giving evidence to the privileges committee of the Parliament, you won't give the an answer to that particularly salient question.
No, my position is that as a barrister, that is a legally privileged position, and until privileged way, I cannot in any court or any privileges committee answer that question if my client, who has the privilege, authorises it.
So can you
back to being a barrister?
Well, can you explain to us the nature of the instruction that you got from this anonymous person?
Not without breaching the legal privilege that I'm not allowed to go into.
Well, you see the difficulty for us, Mr. Henry. And this is probably the most interesting part of the whole aspect to how, out of the blue, you knew that pursuing Mr. Glenn would see payment of some of the costs that you had incurred. Now, you're an officer of the court, and so we haven't required that you speak under oath. The expectation is that you'd be very cooperative with this whole inquiry. But the position you take is extremely obstructive.
The position I take is the legal position I must take. I am required by the privilege of my client, who is not Mr. Peters, to do it. And you should know that, Mr. Brown, as well as I do.
Are you able to indicate the passage of the transaction? We hear from Mr. Glenn confused reports that firstly he thought he paid the money to New Zealand First. Now you tonight saying that he paid it directly into your fees account.
The position is on the 22nd of December 2005, some of $99,980 was deposited by Mr. Glenn into my practice account.
When you said that you expected somebody else to be funding this, and then had to go off and find somebody, what was the range of discussions you had with various people in your pursuit of someone to pay the debt?
I had a talk with a range of people, including members of the committee and Tauranga that was organising the petition, and I was given a range of names of people who they anticipated would make donations, and that never turned into any money being paid. At the end of the petition, once the hearing was complete and finished, we did a dig around to see who else we could find, and a client of mine made the suggestion that I approach Mr. Glenn.
You've said that this is not an uncommon sort of practice for you. You've gone this sort of fundraising exercise over years. Is the person who suggested you go to Mr. Glenn been a source of funds in the past?
No.
You also said that you thought that there'd be no patronage, I think it was, accepted by you or Mr. Peters. What would you otherwise describe the $100,000 or thereabouts as being?
Mr. Brownlee, the whole purpose of the structure is to ensure the politician does not know who is paying the money. And I was taught that by your party when I was acting for Wyatt Creech, and it is the principled way to do it. Your party and every political party should never know who the major donors are. That's the
did that with the standing orders requiring that all politicians disclose their pecuniary interests. It's in fact why we're here this evening. So the question would arise, when should a politician not know that a debt that might otherwise fall to them has been paid?
Well, there's no debt for it, Mr. Peters, and if you listen to Mr. Cox, you'd understand that.
With all due respect to you, Mr. Henry, you said on the radio earlier this year, in this particular case, we actually had another person accepted. You explained the process to go out to Mr. Glenn. But the receiver then said this was to pay your bill, which is really a donation to Mr. Peters, isn't it? And your response was, in a way, yes. So I'd ask you, if you qualify that, in what way would it not be a donation to Mr. Peters?
Mr. Brownlee, I was speaking there in terms that the media and the public would understand. This is an inquiry formally set up, and I'm explaining to you the exact legal position. And what I've said in the media and what I've said here, please have regard to what I've said here, because I've told you I was less than forthcoming in the media. But here, I have told you the
whole
story.
Well, with all due respect, it's not about whether you're forthcoming or not. The question that we've got to decide is, should Mr. Peters have declared on his pecuniary interest register the $100,000 paid to you by Mr. Glenn? Now, when you were telling the media that, in a way, yes, this is a donation to Mr. Peters, that somehow the less than forthcoming part of that has been explained by your previous history. I don't think it has. So I ask you again, when is, in a way, a donation not a donation?
Are you asking for my opinion?
Well, I'm asking you what you meant.
The position is very simple. I'm a barrister. Until I render a fee note to the solicitor, that Mr. Cox explained to you, there is no obligation on the solicitor to pay me. Even then, it is not a debt.
You're not being very helpful.
The renders a bill. Let me finish, please.
Yeah, sorry.
I've the courtesy to listen to you. You've got the courtesy to listen to me.
I will.
Get away. Thank you. When the solicitor renders a bill, as Mr. Cox explained, there is then a debt. This is, as I understand it, a declaration of pecuniary interests. A pecuniary interest, it is monetary. And it is only at the time that the solicitor renders a bill that there is a pecuniary interest to declare. That is the way the law has worked for hundreds of years.
Well, I'll go back and ask you the question again. Given that you said, in response to the question, that $100,000 was to pay your bill, which is really a donation to Mr. Peters, isn't it? You said, in a way, yes. In what way was it not a donation?
It's not a donation because what has happened is I'm prepared to donate my time, and donating my time has always been an acceptable thing for people to do in politics. What has happened is instead of me donating the time, I have been paid, for which I'm very grateful. What you're asking and what you're requiring to hear is the definition of what is required to be declared. What is required to be declared are debts and gifts of a pecuniary nature. And you're talking about something wholly different.
No, I don't think I am. The question arises from the long history you've given us. You've made it very clear that various times Mr. Peters has personally met some of the expense incurred in the various legal actions that you've represented about. And so the question would always arise, who ultimately would be responsible for meeting those costs?
Until I render a bill, nobody.
Well, okay, we'll come back. There are other people who have some questions.
Can I finish, please, Mr. Brownlee?
Go ahead.
When I choose to render a bill, then my instructing solicitor will render a bill and there'll be a legal debt that requires to be disclosed. Until I choose to do that, there is no debt. So that is a completely lawful position.
And what did you take the $100,000 for? What did you take the $100,000 for?
Until I render a bill, there is no legal debt.
As you,
I can long do that time if I choose, or I can render a bill when I choose.
So what would you say the $100,000 was as a proportion of your costs for the unrendered bill, and therefore the donation that you presumed towards the debt?
Can I break that out of your question into the statement?
It was a question. What was your total cost?
The question mark after the statement's not a question. Can you answer the question in half like an answer?
Well, you didn't answer when you started out. Try this thing.
Do you want to know how much?
What was?
Do you want to know how much it contributed towards the total cost?
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Chairman, is that right? Is that right?
Trust during this time.
I have nothing to do with the spending trust.
So, no.
come sitting here after that.
What about with regards to the Tarawa violation petition? The Tarawa petition.
There is no law being read to Mr. Peters for that.
Thank you. I'm going to refer to Dr. Cullen, then Dr. Matt King, here, or try to do something here on my mind. The collection from Mr. Glynn was paid in December 2005.
22nd of December 2005 was paid into my general account.
So, if it had been a gift, Mr. Peters, I'm asking you to comment whether it is or not that point. If it had been, it would have been included in Mr. Peters' declaration of June 22, 2006, since that was covered 2005 year.
I can't answer that.
But you so achieved that Mr. Peters didn't know about the stone ocean until back into July 2008.
He did not know about it until July when I told him.
So from the very part of my declaration in 2006, wasn't it?
That would seem logical to me.
Yes, thank
you. Dr. Mann, qualified as a point.
So when did you pay the full costs to the instructing solicitor for Mr. Clark?
I cannot remember the date, but the court costs were not determined until the following year.
Okay, so you received $100,000 at one point and then subsequently paid $40,000.
Doesn't work that way, Mr. Matt. I received $100,000 as my money. I paid tax on it as my money, and I'm entitled to do what I like with my money.
Did you ever have any discussions? You had this arrangement going back to 1991 about the way fees should be paid, donations and so forth. Did you have any discussions of any type whatsoever of a donation in relation to the electoral petition?
I would have told Mr. Peters that I had been paid.
When would you have told him that?
I wouldn't have a clue, but it would have been after I received the check from the start of the week.
A month or so, a week or so, or less?
You're talking 2005, 2006, I couldn't answer that honestly.
Would you have a check? Back looking at your notes?
There'll be no notes of any discussion with Mr. Peters.
But it'll be reasonably close in time, I guess.
I would be speculating, I just can't honestly answer it.
So, in short, what you're telling us is that Mr. Peters would have known that there had been a donation in relation to the electoral petition.
Mr. Peters would have known there had been a donation or donations. He would not have any clue as to how it was made up or where it came from.
Then, in any discussion about the size of it?
No.
None whatsoever.
That would be a breach of the arrangement.
So it's just simply the fact that there was a donation.
The discussion was that the bill had been met. And I think it was the bill had been met and substantially met because it hadn't been totally met.
So that would have indicated to Mr. Peters, wouldn't it? That would have to have been a sizable donation.
No, it could have been many donations.
Even the collective, the total amount of the donation, whether a single or many, they would have had to have been indicated to Mr. Peters. They would have been sizable.
I do not recall ever telling Mr. Peters how much my bill was. So Mr. Peters would be totally in the dark, and the whole arrangement is dependent totally in the dark. It's deliberately set up that way. We did that for our creech, and I believe that is the ethical and principal way to show this man.
So you put them on notice and then release that there had been donations in relation to the electoral petition.
He would have known that somehow fundraising had been done and payments had been made to me.
Did you tell him when the court costs were paid?
No.
You had no discussions about that whatsoever?
No.
Did you tell him?
He will have learned for the first time tonight that I paid those costs personally.
certainly would have known, however, about the amount of court costs. After all, he's an investor.
Yes.
And he would have known, though, and that they've been paid as well, wouldn't he?
Yes.
When would he know that?
I can't remember the date the court costs were ordered, but he certainly would have known sometime after the order was made.
So again, he was put on notice. He didn't receive a bill, just told us that donations received
the
and
the costs paid. Mr. Mack, you're missing the point. Until such time as the bill is rendered from the instructing solicitor, there is no debt. What we're talking about here is whether or not a debt needs to be declared. Until the instructing solicitor renders a bill, there is no debt. Full stop.
We're also talking about donations. Pass.
Supplementary question, Mr.
Chairman.
I just want to...
Where are you talking about donations? I'm sorry, I've got the term of reference here. I can't see donations anywhere.
That's fine.
It's talking about gifts, and it's talking about debt. What? Gifts and debt in a pecuniary sense.
That's right. Well, donations are gifts.
Yes, it's the same. Some sense of the time in which you advised him that you had received donations, as we call them, in relation and when you advised him the court costs have been paid. Early part of the 2006 or not?
Mr. Mapp, you have to understand the way we operate. We do not need to communicate in huge ways on these issues because of the understanding we have and we stick to it. Any discussions that I may be guessing would have probably occurred in 2006 simply because of the proximity of Christmas. I did not see Mr. Peters over Christmas and I have been out in New Zealand. Probably, in fact, I was out in New Zealand on the 22nd of December in Australia.
So you put Mr. Peters on notice that the $40,000 court costs had been paid and that there had been donations for to cover that and maybe some of the other time.
You put it in a very formal way. He would have been simply told it had been looked after.
Mr. Henry, that as there was no debt, as legally there could be no debt, it therefore follows there is nothing to repay, and there could therefore be no donations because there was no legal liability whatsoever.
That is the position, and I understand Mr. Cox explained that as the position, and I agree with
it. So, we could go ahead to Dr. Mann on that point, and he can use the ground and story to wait some time for her question.
Although the $40,000 cost was paid out of your... Mr. Cornell, yes, Mr.
Jones.
So, I'm here to inquire about $40,000 cost, Mr. Chairman. Right. In terms of reference, it's very clear.
Well, I believe
the question is Mr. Glenn's contributions. That's with the point raised by Mr. Bahai. Second point was raised by Mr. Goldberg. None of the mention of this issue.
Are you seriously suggesting that you would have paid $40,000
in Fort Hoff, which were against Mr. Peters, and you advised Mr. Peters of that fact, and that Mr. Peters would not have understood that that would effectively come out of $100,000 donations received.
Mr. Mack, I'm not seriously saying it, I am saying it. I'm not suggesting, I'm telling you exactly what I did.
Thanks, legal services to New Zealand First as distinct from the legal services we provide.
I was at one stage what was described as a judicial officer, which was someone who was not necessarily a member of the party to resolve disputes, but that is going back to when the party was first established. I do not believe I have done any jobs for New Zealand First in the last 2 years.
Okay.
I have done work, certainly at the initial stage of the New Zealand First, to help get it set up. I provided legal services.
And was the party ever invoiced or charged fees for those services?
No. No. I don't believe I've ever rented a bill to New Zealand First. I could be wrong on that, so I don't believe I have.
I've submitted a number of questions to the committee, Mr. Kennedy, and I'm probably about to run out of time to ask you all of those. Would you be happy to respond in writing to those questions I've submitted to Mr. Powers, Chair of the
Committee? Why don't you ask me while I'm here? Because I'm about to leave the country and I won't be able to do it for a month.
Spoke of on the 21st of July. We had an interview with Brady and representative who said he gets bills, meaning Mr. Peters, in relation to this case, because you wouldn't be able to radio from the other. He gets told certain parts of the bills have been covered, and he makes the balance.
Does
Brown
believe the word bill
would
be very less one used with the media? What we're talking about here is the legal position. He has never had an account from my instructing solicitor which creates a legal debt. And maybe I was talking slightly loosely with the media, but here we're dealing with precision. You've had Mr. Cox here to deal with it with precision, and you're getting your answers with precision.
Okay. Do you stand by your statement also on that interview that the plaintiff is my client, and it was a donation towards my client, and that is good defense?
That was exactly what I said in the media, but the legal structure and the legal position is what I've explained to you today.
Okay, so done, and then Mr. McCulley, and then finally, Dr. Norman.
Mr. Henry, can I just clarify that what you've been saying to us in essence this evening is that over the years that you've represented Mr. Peters, you have never rendered an account to him for work undertaken, because of your belief in the principle he should know about where money's coming from. That in the state, just to be able to understand, that when that amount had to be funded, you and others had either sought to fundraise for those amounts without involving Mr. Peters, or you borne any shortfall effectively as an imaginary issue all the time. Is that a summary of
unfortunately, your voice has been cutting out because of vibration, but it sounds to be a reasonable summary from what I can hear. The position is that, yes, I have always borne any shortfall. I have never put Mr. Peters in a position where there is a legal debt that can ever be used against him.
Could you estimate for us what proportion of that total figures you might have borne as a legal shortfall?
I've never worked it out.
Substantial.
But I have conducted, I can't remember how many defamation cases in the early 90s. I conducted the early wine box campaign right through until 1995, and I think the government funding started. I have spent many, many hours that have ended up being donated to Mr. Peters. Having said that, Mr. Peters, when he can, has tried to make sure money comes to me, and he has, in that time, paid a lot of money to me.
And that would be my way of him saying, well, I must owe you something for this. Here's a check to come out of that. Well, how would that discussion occur?
The discussion would occur on the basis that he's got some money, and he said, well, here's some money. He knows that he owes me, in the moral sense. And when you work through the number of actions he's been involved with and the amount of legal work, anybody charging it out at a big firm like a non-chief barrister would have a very substantial amount of bills they could render.
You have never indicated to him when he's made a payment to you that this covers 20, 30, 40, 50% of the outstanding values retained as a payment being made as it will be made.
I've never sat down and worked out the total amount that would be due, so I couldn't make that call.
Two remaining questions. Dr. Murray, can I finish with Dr. Russell?
Mr. Henry, you'll recall that press conference that the Honourable Mr. Peters gave in which he denied receiving funds from Mr. Green, convicted with props, and he's been pretty much a number of times subsequently. It was some time after that you decided to approach Mr. Peters and called you early notice and informed him of the contribution he was expecting from Mr. Glenn. Suggests that you made an initial decision where you saw Mr. Peters' denial of receiving money from Mr. Glenn, not to tell him of your receipt of those funds, and then it's changed out subsequently. Could you tell us how that worked? Is it a case that the law changed your mind, and so what's the thing that changed your mind?
The thing that changed my mind was in the week leading up to my telling, there was a very substantial attack in the media on Owen Glenn. Owen Glenn issue was time. The vilification of him in the media, which was entirely unjustified, was stopped. For that reason, I went to see Mr. Peters and I told him of the donation. If that hadn't happened, he would not know to this day.
Just going out on Peter's questions. I mean, how often does Mr. Peters give you a check? Like, did you give one last year or year before?
I quite honestly can't answer that sitting here because I'd have to go back and check my records. But I do know in the early 1990s, he did pay quite a lot of money to me. But in the last couple of years, I really can't answer.
Right. During the time that you've been involved in these various courthouses, particularly the Tower Hall?
Over the Tower Hall petition?
Yeah.
Nothing. No, I have no recollection of any checks from the Tower Hall petition.
Okay.
Thank you, Stevie, for Rivers, for coming today. Thank you for making yourself available earlier as well.
Mr. Chairman,
yes,
can I clarify the written question?
Sorry.
Can I clarify the issue of the written question? I'm going to conduct a conference on Wednesday. On Thursday, I leave the country for 2.5 weeks. If there are written questions for me to answer, it's a matter of when I can get to do it, because I will not be back until early September, and I simply will not have a chance to address them between now and when I leave. But I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll consider that in the committee. Deal with the issue. They have the facilities.